Welcome to the program for Friday, February 24th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you very much for being on the program with me this afternoon. We start, as we always do on Friday, with the Federal News Countdown. Each week at this time, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important federal news stories of the week. They rank them in order from number three to number one and then come in the studio with me and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week, happy to have on the program both veterans of the Federal News Countdown, Linda Springer of Ernst & Young, former OMB controller, OPM director. It's great to see you as always.
Good to see you too.
My fellow Pennsylvanian too.
Yes.
Appreciate you coming in today. Tim Hext of AgileX, always good to have you on the program as well. You are the number one Apple evangelist on my program, of everybody who appears on the show.
And also from Pennsylvania.
I did not know that.
Well, now you do. There you go.
Really? Where in Pennsylvania are you from?
West of Philadelphia in media.
And then you and Linda probably are just about neighbors then, because you're from...
We actually talked about it in the hallway, yes. So.
All right, fantastic. Well, then it's an all-Pennsylvania countdown today, and we will start where we always do with...
Number three!
Third most important federal news story of the week for Tim Hext is from Yahoo Finance, a Reuters story, headline, CIA to software vendors, a revolution is coming, and they weren't talking about in some foreign country, right?
No, in fact, it was a technology software purchasing revolution. The point of the article is that... like many government agencies, they're pointing out that as the technology moves into the cloud, where the technology providers are going to have to find new ways to allow the government and others to pay for that software.
Mm-hmm.
Because traditionally, yeah, I have a computer and I buy some software for it and you charge me X per computer. Well, in the cloud, you know, there's hundreds or thousands of computers, and how do you even measure how much software I'm buying?
Mm-hmm.
And so it gets prohibitively expensive very quickly. And so what the government wants to do is buy software in a more metered way, almost like you would buy electricity, you know, based on what I use. The challenge with this will take time for everybody to get comfortable with, because the challenge is how do you measure value from what you've bought with mm-hmm. electricity? I know I get 60 watts. That'll light a light bulb. But with a big, complicated piece of analytics software, is one person asking a really important question worth more than hundreds of people asking little questions that mm-hmm. takes more computers? So it's a much more dicey proposition to get everybody understanding how to get value for what they're buying and to get value from what they're buying.
There are two things of this in this story that I thought were particularly noteworthy. One is the CIA saying we want to buy software this way. We're not being pushed this way because the administration says we should. We see value in doing it this way. And the other thing that I thought was noteworthy was that it's the CIA saying this. The one of the most secretive intelligence agencies in government. Is that significant here, that it's an agency like the CIA that is saying this?
Well, there is some significance that the CIA in this case is in the public space talking about what they do at all.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. But and there is a comment in the article that says he in response to – this is Gus Hunt, who's sort of the chief technology executive there in response to a question said, we understand technology vendors. We will have to give you insights into what we're doing so that you can help us measure our use of your stuff. And mm-hmm. that would be a departure for us in some ways. But I would not characterize this as something that only the CIA is interested in. This is something that is spreading across government, mostly because they don't just have a couple of computers in a computer room anymore that we're buying software for.
Yeah.
They have these growing expanses of computing resources. How do you buy software for that?
Is the fill-in-the-blank as a service revolution difficult or more challenging for an intelligence agency than for another agency, or is it just really commoditized to the point where it doesn't matter who's using what?
Well, all organizations, including clandestine ones, can benefit from these architectures. The one difference is a lot of maybe the commercial organizations and even civilian parts of government will be able to leverage the commercial infrastructures that are rising. So he refers to Amazon, you know, and so mm-hmm. so civilian agencies can fire up some of the Amazon cloud and solve an IT problem. That is more difficult for national security agencies where they will continue to run their own clouds more likely. So other than that, though, the architecturally, the philosophies, the value proposition applies to anybody who's got more than a couple computers they need to get more value from.
Tim Hecht's number three most important federal news story of the week is from Reuters through Yahoo Finance. The headline is CIA to software vendors. A revolution is coming. Linda Springer, your third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is Execs Oppose Proposed Financial Disclosures. Senior executive service members actually having to having data put online of what they make is I'm surprised that is even being considered.
Well, it is interesting, Francis, because this is legislation called the Stock Act that was really focused on insider trading by members of Congress. And in the course of crafting this, the House version requires SES members to do a couple of things, one of which is to report their trades, not just members of Congress, but members of the SES, and that's thousands of our leaders within the federal government that would be required to report their trades and transactions to the Office of Government Ethics within a 30-day time period, according to this. Now, in addition, as you just mentioned, there would be a further requirement of posting the annual financial disclosures on a public website. Now, all that information is FOIable today, but this would go a step farther. I think what's notable, at least to me about this, was that I'm not sure it's well known about the expanse of this beyond Congress to the SES. And I think it was my intent here was to alert people about this, that it's not just a side issue buried inside the act.
It's interesting that you bring that up because I had Trey Hodgkins from Tech America on yesterday, and he was talking about a provision in this that could potentially turn contractors who do business with federal agencies and go to, say you were at OPM and I'm coming to you and I'm just trying to get information on how I might serve you better, that information might be classified, and there's a term for it in the act that I can't recall right now. It's online at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, but the result of the one provision of this act would be that people in that position for contractors would have to register as lobbyists, and essentially the contractors would turn into lobbying firms because they would now be employing lobbyists rather than hiring them kind of at arm's length. So it's interesting that you bring this up. There is so much more apparently in the Stock Act that affects federal employees than anybody ever imagined.
Well, the already in the Lobbying Disclosure Act, there are requirements that go beyond what most people would think of traditionally of as lobbying activity. And a lot of that focuses on certain types of contacts and communications between contractors and political appointees and members of the executive office of the president. So I think the lesson here is that legislation with a particular intent often expands to include other things that are not necessarily obvious. And in this case, it affects the SES.
The details of that are posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Linda's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is Execs Oppose Proposed Financial Disclosures, and you can read what the Senior Executives Association President and General Counsel, Carol Bonacero and Bill Bransford, respectively, are saying about that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Back with the second most important federal news story of the week from Linda Springer and from Tim Hecht when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues as the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
To you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individually.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
WashingtonCaps.com is the destination for behind-the-scenes coverage of your Washington Capitals. Get the most comprehensive Caps coverage with in-depth previews and analysis for every game, and blog, Twitter, and Facebook updates all day, every day. Check out Caps 365, where you can view all the best goals, saves, and hits, and access exclusive player interviews, press conferences, and much more. Check it all out on WashingtonCaps.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud, that's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. The administration has renewed the push to increase diversity in the federal workforce, but the idea of diversity has evolved. We'll hear from a 21st century chief diversity officer. Plus, Congressman Chris Van Hollen gives us his view of how the new benefit payment structure for new federal employees became law. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is on with the most important federal news stories of the week selected by Tim Hext of Agilex and Linda Springer of Ernst & Young. And we are up to
number two.
And Tim, your second most important federal news story of the week is from NextGov. The headline is FCC holds a few aces on Spectrum. Now, Spectrum, I have to be honest with you, is one of these stories that I have followed and I understand, and I get the federal government involvement with it and regulation of it and governance over it. But bring me in the loop on how this applies to kind of day-to-day operations or long-term impact and that kind of thing in government.
Well, as you know, I am passionate about mobility, mm-hmm. And it's not just about making phone calls. It's about increasingly having the information you need at those mobile touch points.
Mm-hmm.
And more, it's the amount of information that people demand at that leaf node of the network is growing. And the bandwidth to get it there is shrinking. The amount of available capacity is shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just to put in more equipment to pump more data through. There are parts of the airwaves that are underutilized, and they happen at different frequencies that allow you to do different kinds of data transfers.
Not 1500 AM, I hope.
Well, that is not a frequency that I think is at risk in this
Excellent.
Auction.
All right, good.
But the point of that is the various parts of this spectrum of frequencies that are available for doing this kind of information transfer might give the freedom to have very wide-scale Wi-Fi networks, for instance, mm-hmm. rather than it's not just about more cell phones carriers having more 3G data. It's about them being able to innovate in what kind of new technologies we put on that new spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And so the goal is to have this spectrum now and this shift from the broadcasters who own the spectrum today, and the FCC is going to hold some reverse auctions where they, in effect, get back some of that spectrum to auction off to the wireless carriers to give them a chance to innovate it. There was another story in Technology Review, which I thought was related, which I thought was interesting, which talked in more depth about the new kinds of wireless services that might be enabled now, most notably things like, you know, a wide-scale deployment of what we would consider Wi-Fi, you know, that works within 100 feet of your base station. Well, what if that worked across the town or mm-hmm. city and so on? So this is really about increasing capability of getting high bandwidth network connectivity to more places to, you know, serve this ever-growing demand of mobile computing.
Have we or will we soon hit the ceiling when it comes to availability based on the infrastructure that exists now?
Well, again, in part, it's not just about infrastructure. It's not just putting up more towers. It's about taking different parts of the airwaves and that are currently silent or uh-huh. currently used by, you know, old stuff and apportioning it to these new technologies. But my guess is some people would argue we're already saturated in some places.
Mm-hmm.
Go to a sporting event and try and make a phone call right after a new noteworthy thing, and you can see that things get. But I think it's probably more important in places where it's not about saturated, it's about inadequate bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go to some rural parts of the country where they don't have, you know, the density of connectivity that we have here, do I solve that by putting up an infrastructure like I have here, or new technologies that use different parts of the spectrum to mm-hmm. transmit data more broadly, more efficiently, more inexpensively, and so on.
And I've heard some analysis that indicates that maybe the United States is actually at a disadvantage to other countries in this area because we have so much legacy infrastructure that already exists, and we have so much dedicated bandwidth already dedicated spectrum already that other countries don't have because they're behind us technologically, that it's been easier as this explosion has happened over the last 10, 15, 20 years for them to build up networks with today's technology where we're trying to work around what we already had.
That's right. They skipped a lot of what we spent years using and learning was inadequate, right? So we pay that price for being the ones who innovated it. But I believe, and it wasn't in this article, I think it was in that other technology one that I mentioned, if we're able to distribute these parts of the spectrum broadly the way they hope across these wireless technologies, it will give us the opportunity to have a coverage of high bandwidth data networks that will be world leading again.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I saw in this, Linda, that I thought might appeal to you, to the controller in you, is some members of Congress think that this could generate as much as $15 billion in repurposing, repackaging, and reselling this bandwidth.
Yeah, I saw that. It's going to be interesting, when they have these initial auctions, how those prices actually get set, I mean, how mm-hmm. the market actually works to value those. And, Tim, I don't know if there are different ones that have a greater value than others. What are some of the considerations that will drive the value on those?
Well, and the related point in this, which is that they're going to have to try and, to some extent, without precluding anybody, control uniformity of distribution across wireless carriers. You don't want to just move it from one monolithic broadcaster to one monolithic carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so who can be competitive for which parts of the valuable spectrum? Different parts of the spectrum have different values. So And that will influence what a broadcaster is willing to give up. You know, do I have something that's UHF today that, but if I move to VHF, is doesn't allow me to do as much stuff. And so there are going to be sweet spots that people will be more competitive for. And the question is, and I really, maybe the point of this article is, can the FCC orchestrate all of this in a manner that is not only achieves the goal, you know, a fairer, more uniform distribution of these to the right parties, but also make a few bucks from it?
What's the parallel in this from when they shut down the analog television bans and sold that off for first responder type networks and moved television broadcasters to digital frequencies?
My guess is mostly a matter of scale. I think this is probably a broader, more widespread scale. And I'm sorry, I don't know whether this kind of auctioning process was used then or not.
Okay.
Because it's really interesting to me, this reverse and forward auction combination and how they're going to orchestrate that. Do they have nice experience from having done it? In that case, I don't know.
Tim Hecht's second most important federal news story of the week is from the National Journal through NextGov. The headline is FCC holds a few aces on Spectrum, and you can read it linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Linda Springer's second most important federal news story of the week when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Gina Murphy Darling, Mrs. Green of Mrs. Green's World at MrsGreensWorld.com. She is a successful corporate executive who transformed herself to fulfill her life's mission to inform and connect individuals and businesses in the movement towards global sustainability. Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the wish wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
We look at applications and software development from an architectural view today. At least we should, because quite frankly, it's so much easier to design security in than to find the thousands or tens of thousands of vulnerabilities that might exist in that software at a later date once deployed.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective. And that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Xeon processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are a perfect high-speed solution for lowering costs, improving utilization, and reducing server sprawl. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how together they can power your data center into the future. Talk to GovConnection's experienced federal sales team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
How much fun is safe? From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, kids want to test themselves. Their caregivers want them not to get hurt. Sometimes those goals conflict. Researchers at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center heard about that in focus groups with about 50 child care providers from 34 centers. Researcher Kristen Copeland says that while child care providers like things like climbing equipment to be safe, safe wasn't always fun.
The climbers, while they may be interesting at first, later on children tended to explore other things on the playground, the open space, the natural aspects, digging in the mulch.
Copeland thinks preschoolers may get longer benefit from balls, trikes, and learning to skip. The study in the journal Pediatrics was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS Health Beat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Attention federal managers. The Federal Managers Association invites all federal managers, supervisors, and executives to its National Management Training Seminar, Federal Managers Doing More with Less, on Tuesday, March 13th. Federal managers will gather in Arlington, Virginia for practical presentations, including 7 quick fixes for enhancing performance, improving employee productivity and well-being, and decisively addressing conduct-related issues. For more details, visit fedmanagers.org. That's fedmanagers.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. Every week in the 3 o'clock hour on Friday, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are most important to people who work in government. They rank them in order from number 3 to number 1 and count them down with me on the Federal News Countdown. Today, my experts are Tim Hecht from Agilex and Linda Springer from Ernst & Young. And Linda, your second most important story of the week is the headline is about the payroll tax cut extension, but I imagine you're getting more at how these provisions might impact people coming into the federal government, as we've been talking about throughout the week.
That's correct, and it's interesting that the last story, Tim's second story about the spectrum, actually was something that was in the payroll tax legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And similar to what we said earlier about the public notice of trading, these bills oftentimes have lots of things in them that are somewhat tangential to the a public purpose that we know. Well, in this case, there was a lot of publicity, certainly, about the pension contribution for federal employees, new federal employees, that was in the law. That was one of the ways that the cost of the legislation was offset, or the bill. And, you know, to just restate, and actually in this article, the 3.1 total contribution, an increase over the current 0.8% mm-hmm. of 2.3. I think there's a typo here, but for a total of 3.1% for federal employees hired after this year, after 2012, and that includes any rehires who had left with less than 5 years of service. So take note of that for anyone who comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And that increase will essentially bifurcate the workforce in a certain sense. Not saying that's right or it's wrong, but it does create, if nothing else, an administrative issue. You've got to know exactly when those people were hired. And mm-hmm. for one group, you have a contribution of one amount, and for the previous hires, a different one. One of the questions that gets asked here is, will this be the end of addressing federal pension issues, federal benefit issues, the cost of those, the comparison of the compensation package that federal employees have versus others in the private sector? I think my sense of this is that this is just one step in that, and certainly we expect that this will continue to get attention.
My theory about this, Linda, is that this deal is indicative of what we'll see when it comes to pay and benefits, is that I think a lot of this is going to hit people who haven't started working for the government yet, to the point that maybe we'll see kind of a de facto third system. We have CERS and FERS now, and we might see maybe it will never be codified into legislation like that, but the differences will be significant enough that it will seem to new people coming in as they get a whole different set of benefits than people who are already there. But I have a hard time seeing, with the dynamic the way it is on the Hill and in the White House now, I think there's always going to be at least one senator who's willing to put a hold on a bill until these kinds of things are at least stripped out to this level.
Well, we saw that in the president's budget proposal that there was some movement as well on an increase in the contribution by employees to the pension cost. I think you're right that it's very likely that we could see some new generation of hires that would have a different mix of benefits, a different cost sharing between themselves, to include even the health benefits. Mm-hmm. I mean, and let's think about this. We have people who retire with 5 years of service that get the full subsidy, that the same subsidy that someone retiring with 20 years gets. So I think that that's like – what I would just say, though, here is that it makes more sense if that's the direction, to look at it comprehensively as opposed to looking at pieces in isolation. If we're really going to look at a future way of benefiting and compensating employees, let's look holistically at all the pieces.
When you're looking at this from the outside, Tim, and this debate back and forth about how employees are taken care of, or some people say not, in government, as somebody that does business with the government all the time, how does this impact, if at all, the way you do what you do, the way you interact with people?
Well, that's a good question.
Does it make any difference at all, or is it just kind of noise that doesn't really impact you that much?
Well, clearly, stability in the government and among its employees and its processes is helpful mm-hmm. to us when we're trying to help the government. Mm-hmm. And it's helpful to us as a provider of services to the government. Budget uncertainty and so on. These kinds of things are variables that stress us out.
Yeah.
And so I like the, I think maybe in a more grand sense, the idea that these questions are not lingering. We don't go through another sort of are they going to figure it out kind of phase. Mm-hmm. It's healthy for us when we think about doing service, doing work with the government. I don't see necessarily day to day that the issues that government employees have with the way they are compensated bleeds over as much into the way they work with us.
The reason I asked,
if that was your question.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. And the reason that I ask that, Linda, is I don't know if you saw our series, Managing Morale. We have a ton of resources about it on federalnewsradio.com. But I was curious as to what Tim is seeing is because if you look at the numbers there, it's morale is manifesting itself poorly enough that I couldn't help but think contractors are seeing it, and when they're going into these agencies, seeing that people are just not as invested as they have been in the past or potentially could be.
Well, there's a difference between morale and actual performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that the people that I deal with at agencies are performing at the same level. We haven't seen any change in that, but I think that they do think about these things. They're obviously observant. They hear the discussion, and to the extent that it does go on, it does take on a life of its own, and I think that people do think about it. But I have not seen that translate into performance.
Linda Springer's second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Obama signs payroll tax cut extension into law, and it includes information about how that will affect new federal employees, that bill. You can read it linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Tim Hext and Linda Springer when the Federal News Countdown continues on In Depth with Francis Rose.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
A bittersweet day for the Marines yesterday. More than 170 who recently returned from a seven-month deployment to Afghanistan visited 16 of their own at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. Just hours earlier, two Marine Corps helicopters collided over a remote section of the California desert during a nighttime exercise, killing seven Marines. It was one of the deadliest training accidents in years. I'm J.J. Green.
We have a capsized boat, 2 people in the water.
Every day, EADS North America builds and supports helicopters for the Coast Guard, Army, National Guard, Navy, and Customs and Border Protection.
Rescue Swimmer is in the water.
EADS delivers helicopters that save lives every day, including those bright orange Coast Guard helicopters you see patrolling our nation's capital.
We got them. We're heading back.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
What is causing low morale at your agency, and what can managers do to fix it? Check out our special report, Managing Morale, Fixing the Problems Plaguing Your Federal Office, online at federalnewsradio.com. See the results of our exclusive survey on federal morale and hear what Congress expects of feds during these tough budget times. OPM Director John Barry tells us how he motivates employees, plus tips from leadership experts. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com. Search term morale.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by experts in the world of the federal government. This week, it's Linda Springer and Tim Hext. And we are up to, on the countdown,
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Tim Hext, is from Politico. The headline is Obama Unveils Online Privacy Plan. And this has been something that not just the Obama administration has wrestled with. Just about everybody has had some issue with privacy that they've had to deal with throughout the course of the administration. What did you see here that you thought was noteworthy, Tim?
Well, actually, what I saw was not here. It was in a story that I preferred a bit, but it was like 9 pages long, and it was more a little bit more commercial. But this one, I think, had a lot of the same themes, and so that's why I thought we would use it as to discuss the topic. But it seemed to me in the news a lot lately has been these issues of commercial online privacy and how it affects, in this case, consumers and the government's role in defining a privacy bill of rights that ensures that not only is the consumer aware of what is being collected about them, but aware of how it's used? And is there some way to monitor or enforce that it is not used in ways that were not the intention of what the consumer had? Typically, the commercial world will say, we gather this information and we use it in order to make the services we provide for you more customized and more, higher quality of service. But there was another article that was in the New York Times that was a long article that was talking a lot about some of the kinds of analytics that can now be done with this kind of data. And it was focused on Target and how they keep track of everything you buy so that they can help you buy the right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Grab in the story was that they have a new statistical model to predict whether or not someone is pregnant. And they can actually even sort of predict when you're due. And so they can start to send you coupons for new mother stuff. And the dad comes into the Target complaining that his teenage daughter's getting these ads. And we later learn that she's, in fact, pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So Target knew it before the dad did.
Mm.
And so it brings up this kind of complexity about they're clearly doing this in a way to target their marketing based on, they didn't make it up that she was
right.
pregnant. They just discovered it and leveraged it. And so the consumers, maybe really what this is intended to protect, the people this idea is intended to protect, It's a complicated thing. It's not just, am I allowed to keep track of where you are from your cell phone? It's also, what can I discover about that? How appropriate is my use of that? What role should the government have in dictating that? Frankly, I'm a willing consumer. I'm all for it if they can give me better service, if they know a little bit more about what my interests are. So anyway, all these issues just seemed really cool to me. So.
And I think Tim's attitude is similar to what I'm seeing in a lot younger people. Linda, I had a conversation with my son when he got his most recent phone, an iPhone, you'll be happy to know, Tim.
Yes, I felt it in the force.
And we were talking about use of different things, and I was coaching him on personal information and where you give it and where you don't. And he said, why does it matter if they have my email? Why does it matter if they can identify my location and push information? Because I want that stuff. And I couldn't really give him a good answer. And I get a sense that his generation, and maybe the generation that's in between ours, has a dramatically different view of what privacy is than what we do, and maybe what my parents' generation does. My son just doesn't really care.
So you're looking at me, and I'm feeling very old listening to this.
Well, you're the same age as me.
But I think there is a difference. There's, I'll say, representing maybe an older, more skeptical, cautious group.
You're more mature.
Thank you. That we don't necessarily want to cede control over data about us.
The control more than the actual data itself.
So I think it's an option, in my own view, and Tim and I actually talked about something similar to this before the program, that I want to be able to keep control and to have the option to have that value of that service, but I don't want it that choice to be preempted or just taken away from me. And maybe that's the difference. And there may be times when I think, yep, I definitely see the value for me in you having that information.
Mm-hmm.
But there may be other times where I'm not so sure and I don't want someone else to make that decision.
There was a time a couple of years ago when a particular grocery store, and I won't say which one it is, but they have giant stores, started doing their cards where you swipe the card and so on. And I asked, this was the first month or so they did the program, and I said, what's this for? And the person that gave me the card said, it's so we can collect information about what you buy. I mean, they were very forthright and honest about it. And it was long enough ago before a lot of this online privacy stuff happened that I thought, okay, well, there's value to that because they'll see that I buy these things and maybe they'll give me a coupon for it.
Right.
And that's
that's the idea behind it. And in this example, in the Target case, the goal is to get you coming to Target to buy your things rather than somewhere else, and to give you the incentives you need to do that. Right?
So where does the negative connotation come in then with the collection of this information? Why does it bug people so much?
I believe it's associated with the presumption that someone will ultimately use this data in an inappropriate way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people are saying or blaming retailers for trying to market to me in a more targeted way.
Mm-hmm.
I think they say, you know what? Retailers do what retailers do. That's what they do.
Yep.
And so that's cool. But, and we were talking about this, if the government shows up and says, thou shalt tell me everything Tim is buying because we suspect him of something and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a little bit of the background, the big brother kind of fear. But you know what? Welcome to the 21st century. And so to your example about your kid, so I have a teenage kids as well, and I am trying to impress upon them that there is no privacy.
Yeah.
You should not do anything in a digital form that you would not do in the middle of the street because there is no protection against it. There's no choosing not to have it. It is going to be the way your world is.
So here's just, I think, again, the point why people maybe have some pause.
Mm-hmm.
If you read a story about a school that says your child can't eat the lunch you sent with them to school, and let's say somehow, and I know this might sound fanciful, but someone can get online and say, well, here's where you buy your food, or here are things that you buy. You must be this, you fit a profile. Then maybe that means we need to be more scrutinizing of something in your life. So I think a lot of it is not so much about the information. It's who has access to it, and what's the context in which they use it.
And I guess as analytics and big data becomes more easy to process, that potential becomes even greater. Right now, I'm trying to imagine the process by which somebody would string that information together, and it strikes me as being potentially fairly complicated. But if it is, if my impression is right, you're shaking your head no.
I would say absolutely. I was agreeing with you.
Oh, okay.
Your credit card company knows better than you do how much of your bill you're going to pay next month and on what day you're going to do it and what color ink you're going to write the check with. And that's because in large numbers, people are predictable. And we now have the techniques to leverage that. And so literally, they can know more about you than you might know.
All right. We could do a lot more on this, but we got to leave it there. The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Tim Hengst. It's from Politico. It's headlined, Obama Unveils Online Privacy Plan. And you will hear Linda Springer's choice for the most important federal news story of the week next. Well, as we wrap up today's Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is becoming only the second federal agency to move its big back-end office systems to the cloud. NRC has awarded a $23 million contract to transition its financial accounting and integrated management information system to a privately hosted infrastructure. The agency had been using hosting services provided by the Interior Department. The NRC decision follows a similar move by the Labor Department when it moved its financial systems to a private cloud.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud, that's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Attention federal managers. The Federal Managers Association invites all federal managers, supervisors, and executives to its National Management Training Seminar, Federal Managers Doing More with Less, on Tuesday, March 13th. Federal managers will gather in Arlington, Virginia for practical presentations, including 7 quick fixes for enhancing performance, improving employee productivity and well-being, and decisively addressing conduct-related issues. For more details, visit fedmanagers.org. That's fedmanagers.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is the three most important federal news stories of the week every week as selected by experts in the world of the federal government. Tim Hext is in and Linda Springer with me on the countdown this week. And Linda, your most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is White House Pushes Semi-Retirements. What is here that is that are elements that you had experience with when you were at OPM, and what is different and new here?
First of all, I think this is a great idea. So let me just start by endorsing it and saying that I think it's certainly moving in the right direction. Without understanding all of the ins and outs specifically and formula impacts and things, I think it's the right thing to do to find alternative ways to keep people in the workforce. And I think this one is a little bit different than, for example, the rehired annuitant one that we focused on that was more of a different type of thing where you're actually here and not necessarily accruing more benefits, but you're coming back and being available to the service. Now, mm-hmm. in this case, it's a combination of working part-time, having really one foot in retirement, one foot still in the workforce, if you will. You're getting a salary that's a part-time salary. You're getting an annuity that's a part-time annuity, as I understand it. And so really, it's a transitional type of thing. The benefit for the agencies is that it allows access to information, stops a bit of the brain drain, creates an opportunity for sharing and transition. From the standpoint of individuals, I think we've seen time and time again that studies show that that is a very hard break to make, going from a full-time engagement in a position to a retirement, particularly if one hasn't really done the type of planning for what life after the permanent position is going to be. This helps deal with that. Mm-hmm. So I certainly applaud it. I would just hope that at this stage in an election year that people stay focused on the benefits of it and really do try and work it through and make progress on it. This will take some doing. It's in the budget proposal, but I hope that it doesn't get lost and just become another good idea that is on the shelf.
The thing that I'd like the most about this is keeping these folks around at some level where you can continue to do knowledge capture and knowledge management, mm-hmm. which is something that I hear all the time agencies are really struggling to do. That's a terrific place to cut budgets unless you're the person that's actually trying to replace somebody and replace the knowledge that they have.
I think so. And in many cases, people won't stay in this position indefinitely. They'll stay for a period of time. So it really creates an orderly transition and exchange of knowledge from one generation to the other.
Maybe you'll get a chance, Tim, to do a semi-retirement when you leave Agilex in 40 or 50 years, right? You're going to be there forever, right?
I don't know that there will be any sort of policy in place anytime soon there. But one thing that I thought about this is while I'm a fan of making sure we don't lose that brain drain, mm-hmm. there's also some health in an organization to make sure you've got room for young people to come in. And this threatens to delay that. And so I worry about that a little bit. You need that new growth, you know, mm-hmm. in the organization. I don't know if you feel like there's going to be a challenge there.
I think that it will be addressed if it gets that far along by putting limitations on, you know, again, we're talking part-time, not full-time service. So I think there'll be limitations on the amount in a given year and the duration that you could stay.